blackness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on Election Day 2024 Eve. By this time tomorrow, when we open these phone lines, nearly all of you will have cast your votes in this pivotal election in our nation's history at this particular juncture. Thank you for tuning into the program. My name is Abraham Hamilton III. I am the host of the Hamilton Corner. I am joined by the Corner contingent right across from me this evening is your friendly neighborhood recovering whataholic who leaps tall stacks of birch in a single bound. Mr. Marty Sparks, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Rosa decided to avoid the studio for this week. He'll be out this whole week. And in the screening room, we have producer extraordinaire, often imitated, never duplicated, the real Jay Mack. And we are ready to rock and roll with today's edition of the program. At this very moment, many of you, if not most of you, are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. As you do so, I want to remind you to do so with intentionality. Understanding the primacy that God places on the family. This truly is the day that the Lord has made, and I will rejoice and be glad in it. A lot is going on all over the world, but frankly, the world is focusing on what is happening here in our country. I mean, did you see the parade floats in Japan? Where they had these huge Trump parade floats in Japan, and people in other parts of the world talking about what's going to happen here in our country. You know, at this juncture, probably 40% of the American electorate, those who are going to participate, have cast votes, cast their ballots in the early voting. And there's a lot that is to transpire clearly by tomorrow. I hope you all have your plans. If you are an Election Day voter, I hope everybody in the Hamilton Corner audience is taking full advantage of our citizenry and using our civic participation as a means, not the exclusive means, but as a means of discharging faithfulness to our Lord, that we are good stewards over our citizenship. God could have planted us in any other country, but he's planted us here. With all of the features, he's not surprised that we have a constitutional republican form of government guaranteed to us by Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution. And we are at a place where we will have a clear trajectory as to what we can and should expect our nation to be going forward. As always, we will turn to the Word of God to begin the program this evening. I will be a part, I'll be a guest during portions of AFR's coverage, election night coverage. I'll also be appearing on a couple, well, at least one I know right now of another television network's election night coverage. That'll be interesting. But we're here. We're here. As I was praying and pondering this moment that we're in our nation's history, the Lord brought me to the book of Deuteronomy, and I want to share that with you, where the Lord brought me. It's interesting that we're at this place. I also want to reiterate the encouragement to continue fasting and praying, not only through tomorrow, but to Wednesday, November 6th, because it is vitally, vitally important that we understand what will we be and what will we do after this election is over. Deuteronomy chapter 17. I'm going to focus on verses 18 through 20, Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 18 through 20. This is, for those of you who are new to the program, the book of Deuteronomy. The root word of Deuteronomy is deuter, which means two. This is the second telling. The word Deuteronomy literally means second telling. This is the second of, or the deuterocanonical expression of Moses as he is preparing the second generation of wilderness Israelites to enter the promised land. The scripture bears out that those who exited Egypt through the Red Sea, all of them, except for Joshua and Caleb, expired in the wilderness. All right. And so now we have the second generation of wilderness Israelites, which will include people who were born in the wilderness who became adults in the wilderness. You know, remember they were 40 years in the wilderness. In this portion of the text, Moses is prophetically warning the Israelites as to what they will expect, because they will come to a place where they will opt for a king. And Moses is giving warning, warning them as to what a king will do, but also giving the people of God a responsibility concerning monarchs. And this is what Moses warned the people of Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 18. Now it shall come about when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priests. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by carefully observing all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted up above his countrymen, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right or the left, so that he and his sons may continue long in his kingdom in the midst of Israel. This is a part of the Mosaic Law. This is a part of the writings of Moses. This is the word of God conveyed not merely to the king, not merely to the Levitical priests, but this is a warning that was given, an instruction that was given to all of the Israelites. A couple of the highlights again. Now this shall come to pass when the king sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law. The king was instructed by God through Moses to handwrite his own personal copy of the law of God. Not only that, the scripture instructs he is supposed to do this, verse 18, on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priests. The priests were supposed to provide a standing audience before whom the king is supposed to handwrite his own copy of the law of God. Then the Lord explains why. So that the king's heart is not lifted up above his countrymen. And that he may not turn aside, that he may not stray from the commandment of God, from the right or to the left. Guys, this is amazing. Now, if you contrast this with what we have recorded for us in 2 Kings 22. In 2 Kings 22, many years later, things deteriorate so much so in the nation of Israel to where not only has the nation been divided, at this juncture, there is no more northern kingdom of Israel. Josiah becomes king at 8 years old as a boy in the 18th year of his reign. So at 26 years old, we learn what is recorded for us in 2 Kings 22, verses 8 through 13. Then Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, who read it. Shaphan the scribe came to the king and brought back word to the king and said, your servants have emptied the money that was found in the house and have delivered it into the hand of the workmen who have oversight of the house of the Lord. Moreover, Shaphan the scribe told the king, Hilkiah the priest gave me a book. And Shaphan read it in the presence of the king. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes. Then the king commanded Hilkiah the priest, Ahikam the son of Shaphan, Akbar the son of Micaiah, Shaphan the scribe, and Asaiah the king's servant, saying, go inquire of the Lord for me and the people and all Judah concerning the words of this book that has been found, for great is the wrath of the Lord that burns against us, because our fathers have not listened to the words of this book to do according to all that is written concerning us. Look at that contrast. The Lord required the king that at the inauguration, you know, it's akin to our January 22nd inauguration, that on inauguration day, the king is supposed to stand in the presence, or sit, where in the presence of the Levites, and hand copy his own personal copy of the law of God. The whole nation was instructed in this manner. Moses gave this instruction to everybody who was about to enter the promised land. Yet, time passes, calendars turn, years go by, and we come to a point in Israel's history to where the king of Judah is surprised that there is such a thing called the book of the law. How does this happen? The book of Proverbs tells us sin grows as a man travels. If you wonder how this happens, I would submit to you that you're living in it. We are living in a nation that our official severance papers from the United Kingdom include that because of the laws of nature and nature's God, because man has unalienable rights, that man doesn't have the quality nor the capacity to give rights to men. God is the one who gives men rights. And because of the usurpations and the encroachments of the British crown, we are justified before God in separating from you. We have now gotten to the place where we're actually debating whether or not a boy is actually a boy. We're actually living in a time where our highest court in the land has ruled that the Bible has to be excluded from official curricula in our nation. What I'm saying to you is that we can look in the scripture and say, man, how did that happen? But we're living in it now. And what is going to happen in our nation, as it will be recorded tomorrow, will be a clear indication whether or not we will have the opportunity to have a reprieve and reverse course as what transpired under Josiah's leadership, or will we go headlong in the direction that allows for the book of the law to remain buried? But there's one major difference with us. It's not as if the book of the law is lost. We are intentionally attempting to hide it societally. And here's the point I want to make to you. It's very easy to point to the kings and say, man, the kings of Israel became increasingly wicked and they strayed. But I want to remind you of something. This instruction for Deuteronomy 17 was given to the entire Israelite assembly. The entire nation was made aware that you are being informed here and now that your kings must begin their rule with a hand copy of the Lord's law for the express purposes of making sure that they don't get too puffed up. Don't become too high on the hog. Don't see themselves higher than they should. Don't elevate themselves above the people. And so that the king does not stray. Likewise, the Levites, the Levitical priests, who I will remind you that Moses himself was of the Levitical tribe, of the tribe of Levi. The Levites had a responsibility in making sure that the kings did this. What I'm saying, that the drift was not isolated into one segment of Israelite society. The entire nation was accountable for it. My question for us is, what will we be in the Lord's bride in our nation, who the Lord said he deposited to be the pillar and ground of truth? Will we be salt and light in our land and be a portion of the remnant that God employs to redirect the course of our nation? Or will we become like the state church of Germany, that as the trains were transporting people to the gas chambers and churches were near the tracks, they just sang a little louder to drown out the screams of the ones who are headed to the gas chambers?
Election Night Coverage 2024.
Starting at 6 o'clock Central Time on Election Night. The polls, of course, on the eastern side of the country, 7 o'clock there, will be closing in several key states like Pennsylvania, like Michigan, North Carolina. So we'll be looking at those right off the bat on Election Night.
It's Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. What country will we be? What kind of country will we be tomorrow? Will we have an adjustment? I mean, again, it's not lost on me that dating back to Deuteronomy 17, the instruction was given to all of Israel. The king had a role to play, clearly, but the Levites had a role to play. We have a role to play. It's going to be instructive for us to see what happens. Now, these things are always interesting to me. In the final run up to Election Day, and I'm seeing reports now that over 78 million Americans have cast ballots in early voting already. You know, the monitors in the studio have all kind of news stuff going on, and that's being reported. You know, only about 150, 160 million people usually vote in total. So that's more than half of the electorate, assuming norms hold true in terms of total vote quantities. You know, you have to remember the established narrative is that Mr. Robinette got 81 million votes and Mr. Trump got 76 million. You do quick math, 157 million votes. So if nearly 80 million people have voted already. Now, I've also seen some reports, for example, this morning in Maricopa County in Arizona, the largest county in Arizona, that early voting where you have Republicans have outpaced the Democrats in Maricopa County by 200,000 votes, which is unique because in terms of early voting, usually or historically, Democrats have voted numerically in higher quantities. And so many are saying that it's an indication of which way Maricopa County will go. You see similar things in other places around the country. We have higher totals of Republicans early voting now. It will be interesting. Now, something that just came to my attention, and I want you guys to see this, because when I saw this, my initial reaction was, yeah, I know this is happening, but CNN is reporting this. What is going on here? So there was a late report, and CNN is doing this thing. They call it their K-file investigations. I was like, whoa, this is pretty interesting. To where, I mean, this, again, not surprising to me, but the Harris campaign is offering two different messages on the same topic in different parts of the country. In Michigan, where you have a high quantity of Arab and Muslim voters, you have Kamala Harris taking a particular tack as it pertains to Israel. But then in Pennsylvania, which is both of these two being battleground states, where you have a larger contingent of Jewish voters, you have a decidedly different and highly edited message that's being presented there. And as I said, that doesn't surprise me. But CNN is calling this out. What made your boy go, Listen to and watch clip number one. Go.
Tonight, mixed messages. A K-file investigation this hour finds Kamala Harris is targeting crucial battleground voters with vastly different messages on Gaza and Israel. This ad is running in Michigan, which has the largest Arab population in America.
What has happened in Gaza over the past 9 months is devastating. We cannot allow ourselves to become numb to the suffering, and I will not be silent.
All right, well, It's a very different story for an ad in Pennsylvania targeting Jewish voters.
Let me be clear. I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself, because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7.
Huh. That's kind of different. And, you know, as you can see, the second Pennsylvania ad is drawn from the DNC speech. But as you're about to see, and I'm about to show you this, even that speech is highly edited to make it seem like she is saying something completely opposite of what she's saying. But it's like, y'all ain't slick. At the exact same time, you sending two different messages to two different groups, you know, which some may call it, hey, that's shrewd politicking. Others will say, man, that's pandering. Like, if it wasn't for double standards, you would have no standards at all. But again, the thing that's just stuck out to me is that, what is going on, CNN? Listen to and watch clip number two as they go on to analyze this in a bit more detail. Clip number two, go.
Different message. Andrew Kaczynski is out front now. So, Andrew, those obviously do sound starkly different, yeah, to say the least. Tell me more about what you found.
Yeah, that's right. And look, this really illustrates the sort of fine line that the Harris campaign is trying to walk here in the closing weeks, closing days of this campaign on the issue of Israel. Here you have two entirely different constituencies, and they are getting two entirely different messages. There are often times these constituencies have very opposing views on this. If you are a Jewish person in Pennsylvania, you saw that ad that you're getting. You are getting that ad that talks about how strong she is in Israel. If you're a Muslim voter in Michigan, you are getting that ad on Facebook that's talking about how she won't be silent on the issue of Gaza. Now, what's really interesting here is that ad that we just played, the one that's going to Jewish voters in Pennsylvania. Now, it sort of sounds like those two clips of her talking about Israel are together, but they actually cut part of it out. Take a listen to what they cut.
What has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
And you've seen, too, that she, they cut out that portion of the ad where they talked about Gaza from her DNC speech. Those two parts were together. They sliced them. They cut that part out. Now, look, she's also getting hammered a lot on this issue by Republicans. We talked just a couple days ago about how those robocalls were airing in Wisconsin that are made to sound like they're in support of Jill Stein, talking about her position on Gaza, saying that they're highlighting her pro-Israel position, and they're sort of trying to siphon those votes away from her. So this is a really delicate issue for her.
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination are being cut out. It's important to notice that.
So you have this. So you have the ads being run in Michigan and trying to make it sound like Kamala Harris is championing the cause of the Palestinians in Gaza. Then you have the exact same candidate attempting to appeal to voters in Pennsylvania, including a Jewish population, by saying she's defending Israel. And they're severely editing her speech to do so. But the thing, and I get it. I know CNN is trying to get caught doing a little bit of journalism. They're trying to get caught doing a little journalism. But I'm like, hold up now. So y'all try to make it seem like y'all haven't been in the tank for Kamala Harris this whole time. And I'm saying, are the CNN polls that y'all doing indicating to you that you probably need to curry up to snuggle up to Mr. Trump? Is this what's going on here? Because you guys are suspect. Now, again, I'm not surprised this is happening. I mean, I could try to be kind, but man, the lies have been spewing for a long time. So that doesn't surprise me. But the thing, again, I'm just like, And of course, you can get into the meat of everything. And this is one of the things that galls me about the Harris campaign, is that she consistently says these things like, we need to turn the page. I'm like, ma'am, you are the page. You are in office now. When you say turn the page, you're saying turn away from what I am doing currently. Is she not? You are the page. What is it that you would do differently from the Biden administration? Nothing comes to mind. I'm so sorry. Nothing comes to mind that she would do differently. So what page are you turning? You're not turning any page. And the thing that, again, gets me, one of the things with this, is that it shows the utter antipathy they have towards the American people. They think the American people are just rubes, that she can get away with that. Turn the page, ma'am. You are the page. You are the page. We've done things to try to lower illegal border crossings. Yeah, after you've done things to make the border crossings, illegal border crossings, skyrocket. Including allowing the illegals to come in just another way. I mean, the scripture told us, man, in the last days, evil people and seducers will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. That's just wild to me. That's just wild. Now, I'm going to step away from the election for a moment, and I want to bring a story to your attention that just presents a broader assessment of the reality of what kind of country we're going to have. Houston Porter is a man. He's a 28-year-old man who had, you know, scraped and saved his family. You know, they were hustling to get Houston into law school. All right. He's a Westchester, New York resident. That's where his family lives. And he enrolled in Pace University's law school in New York. He happens to be a conservative law student, a member of the Federalist Society, and he participated in and co-moderated a panel discussion concerning New York State's Proposition 1 ballot measure. All right? What Proposition 1 is in New York, simply put, it is a ballot measure to determine whether or not New Yorkers, the state of New York, will amend their state constitution to include gender identity and gender expression as protected classes in New York State's civil rights panoply of protected classes. All right. He was the co-moderator of the debate. He thought the debate was going well. We're law students. We're in a law school. You have, you know, law professors that are in attendance for the panel. You have lawyers who are participating in the panel. Candidates for state office in the state of New York participating in the panel. This all happened. Wait, I have the date. October 15th. What the audacity. Well, after some of the substantive portions of the debate took place, Houston Porter and his co-moderator opened up for questions from the audience. And then all Gehenna broke loose. You know, one law professor is accused of having rushed the stage. Another law professor at the law school is accused of shouting from the audience. You know, ultimately, and this is what I want you to see, Houston Porter received an email from his law school. The email title said notification letter. He says, quote, I felt scared. I felt like time stopped. I was shocked. When he expanded the email, he saw a PDF attachment from Bernard Dufresne, who is the school's Title IX coordinator. Guess what was in the email to Houston Porter? The email from the Title IX coordinator at the school stated that Houston Porter is being investigated for a potential act of sex-based discrimination against a transgender student who said that Porter aggressively pointed. Yes. Y'all could think I'm joking, but I'm not. He is accused of aggressively pointing at a transgender student, and he is accused of misgendering a transgender student who is a male but is identifying himself as a female. Now, Houston Porter is very concerned because he is enrolled in law school through a combination of scholarships, money he saved up from dishwashing jobs he had between undergrad and starting law school, some of his family savings, and some loans he's taken out. The investigation could result in him being suspended, being expelled, being assessed community service, and he has to find out because he has to now participate in a disciplinary hearing. This is happening right now, guys. This has not been resolved. So he was notified that he has to attend a disciplinary hearing where he learn his fate. Now, one of the things that he's concerned about, a lot of the lawyers who are listening to me right now, they'll be able to attest to this, is that to sit for the bar, the state bar in New York, as in states around the country, applicants for the bar have to pass what's called the character and fitness examination, where one of the things that will be examined is whether or not you have any disciplinary or ethical marks on your record. He's concerned that this could prohibit him from fulfilling his lifelong dream of becoming an attorney by passing the state bar examination. I will remind you, the notice that he received is that he's being subjected to a Title IX investigation for sex-based discrimination. Title IX is the law that you'll recall, the 1970s law, the amendment to the civil rights statute that led the way for athletic participation by women, as well as other applications of protections for women against discrimination because they are women. This is yet another application, dare I say, perversion of the Title IX law to extend it to the gender identity panoply.
Those who place their faith in Jesus are elevated to an extraordinary position. As co-heirs with Christ, we share in his inheritance. The gospel is the ultimate dignity giver, elevating the unworthy to unimaginable heights. Our lives should reflect this dignity, empowering us to extend the same grace and love to others that has been so generously given to us. I'm Jordan Shambly, and you can read the rest of The Gospel Dignifies the Undignified on thestand.net.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner, Abraham Hamilton III. I just want to return back to the story about Houston Porter. And by the way, this story is available in the Free Press. This is Barry Weiss's publication, her news outfit. Many may recall that Barry Weiss was a long-time New York Times reporter. And she's like, I just can't take it anymore. It's so biased. It's so non-journalistic. And she ended up leaving the New York Times and starting her own thing, which is good for her. This is one of the sources I use, I refer to for stories and things that aren't covered in our American Pravda apparatus. So that's a good one. Another one that I certainly recommend to use, American Family News, AFN.net, to where you can get your news in addition to things that will be interesting to you from a biblical worldview. And you have your news, not just curated, but you have your news that will be communicated to you from that perspective as well. But getting back to this story, you know, in one moment, one thing, and here he is attempting to facilitate dialogue and discussion over an issue that is pertinent legally, generally, but also pertinent in the state where his law school is because it is ballot proposition. And now he's accused and subjected to a school investigation that very well could impact his record. And he's right to say that, man, this could have an impact on my character and fitness portion of my bar exam application. And what the character and fitness portion is, again, he has to submit information that indicates whether or not he has the ethical chops, if you will, to not be a reproach upon the state bar. Well, where does this idea come from that Title IX is a basis to protect people from gender discrimination? It is the tortured expansion of the word sex to include transgenderism, which does not exist in the text itself, even in the grotesque Bostock opinion that I warned you guys that the Bostock opinion is supposed to be limited to the employment context, to where the term sex is expansively interpreted. But it expressly states that this does not apply to the entire scope of civil rights law. Well, Pace Law School ain't listening to Bostock having limits. Pace Law School is applying the same rationale that the Harris-Biden administration employed when it unilaterally announced that its departments of education and the Department of Justice under the Harris-Biden administration would expansively interpret Title IX as well. Do you guys remember we talked about that on this show? To where, like with a magic wand, the Harris-Biden administration just said, now we're going to apply Title IX in this way. The legislature didn't do it. The Congress didn't pass any law. And there have been lawsuits all over the country simply saying that, yo, we have a separation of powers in the United States of America. If you want to amend legislation, there's a vehicle to do so. It's called Congress. The Harris-Biden administration at the executive branch does not get to unilaterally reinterpret congressional statute, but it sure won't stop them from trying, which is why I bring this conversation full circle. What kind of country do you want to live in? Do you want a country where the executive branch of the administration will do what the Harris-Biden administration did in Tennessee? And by the way, Tennessee is just used as the tip of the spear, but it intervened in Tennessee because it wants to send a shot across the bow for the entire country. This is the state of Tennessee that made the decision to protect its minor citizens from surgical mutilation and chemical castration in the name of trans insanity. The Harris-Biden administration says, not so fast, Tennessee. I mean, we know we have a constitution and everything, but we're not going to let you protect your children. This is the thing that's mind-boggling. It's about the children. Tennessee says nothing about adults that want to do those things. If adults want to do it, fine. But what we're saying is that children don't have the maturity. You know, the same children that we don't like going to, that we don't allow going to the rated R movies by themselves. The same children that we don't allow to drive cars until certain ages. The same children we don't allow to do a whole lot of stuff. Tennessee is saying we don't think it's good for children to permanently decide that they can eliminate their reproductive capacity. We don't think it's right for children, even if they have deluded parents. We don't think it's right for them to be able to permanently mutilate their bodies. With medically assisted self-harm. If you want to do it, you got to wait until you're grown. That's all Tennessee is saying. The Harris-Biden administration is saying, children, but children need to be able to. That's evil, guys. I'm sorry. That's evil. These are the kind of things, guys. When I'm talking about the trajectory of our nation, this is what I'm talking about. Will we have a country to where you have people at the executive branch of our federal government who say, yeah, I think it's a good idea for children to be able to mutilate their bodies permanently? For children to be able to cut off their capacity to reproduce? That's absurd and insane. But I remember reading, good would be called evil. And evil will be called good. This is where we are. I've said before, 2024 very well may be to America as what 1998 was to Venezuela. You only get to vote for socialism once. And you see the consistent drumbeat, and I'm under no delusions. I understand the Republican Party in many areas is drifting as well. But make no mistake about it, there is no moral equivalence. There's no moral equivalence. It's not the same in intensity, in trajectory, in fidelity, in commitment. It's not the same. And come what may, as I've been saying, man, what will we be on November 6th? What will we be on November 6th? You want some more information? I'm sure I'll give you some more information. A report that just came out Friday. It turns out that the Harris-Biden administration participated in a program called the Safe Mobility Initiative in coordination with the United Nations. The Harris-Biden administration's 2023 Safe Mobility Initiative works with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, UNHCR, to aid migrants in bypassing the American southern border, yet gaining entry to the United States of America. The report reveals, quote, under President Biden and Vice President Harris in June 2023, the State Department announced its Safe Mobility Initiative, which allows aliens to sidestep the southwest border and, according to the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, avoid the risks associated with onward movement. In other words, the new Harris-Biden program fast-tracks aliens into the United States out of sight of the American people and without the politically damaging optics at the border. They just allocated in the year 2023 just a smidget, $80 million, just in 2023. Just $80 million. Just $80 million. The report goes on. Then, quote, the initiative's Safe Mobility Offices, SMOs is the acronym, by the way. The initiative's SMOs allow aliens outside the United States to consult with foreign national employees from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees through their International Organization for Migration, who then provide the aliens with several options to resettle in the United States, including through family reunification parole, labor pathways, and additional expansions of the Harris-Biden administration's illegal abuses of humanitarian parole, end quote. Now, remember I was talking to you guys about the parole program? And how it's being manipulated because it was a PR nightmare for certain persons in office concerning what was happening at the border. And so you literally have the Harris-Biden administration saying illegal border crossings are down while they are allocating funds to bring people into the country by circumventing the border. What kind of country do you want? I told you how, you know, I was traveling one time and I saw this. Then I saw news stories. You got these big black curtains up in certain airports. And I showed you O'Hare, Chicago airport. You look behind the curtain. Get back. You got police guard. What? Man, that's illegal immigrants. They ain't crossing the border no more. They flying into the country. But they got to stay at the airport until their parole assignment is. That's the kind of country you want? Like, the same people, man, I'm telling you, this is galling, who know Americans are suffering with inflation and will take the pain that was set aflame by them. When Americans are saying, man, I can't even buy groceries no more for my family. And they'll say, we know, we hear your pain, we'll pass Inflation Reduction Act. And I warned you, it's not targeted to reduce inflation at all. And then they come out during the campaign and admit, and Kamala Harris thought she was doing big time work. My values have not changed. You see, I'm just as committed now as I've been committed to things like climate change because in the Inflation Reduction Act, I was like, wait, what? The inflation? You use the Inflation Reduction Act to pass the Green New Deal? That's what she said. In the Inflation Reduction Act, we accomplished all of the objectives of the Green New Deal. Boy, that's what. You want to talk about galling, you use the pain that Americans are suffering. You use their pain to give cover for your nefarious agenda that you know is not popular. And you do that anyway. You know the American people are concerned about illegal aliens entering our country. And the border was one major point. And you go, I know they're concerned about that border. Let's get them in another way. Guys, this is sick. This is sick. What kind of country will we be? That's the Cloud Piffin strategy applied to the southern border. That's not a formula for a strong and healthy America. That's a formula to fundamentally change us into something we've never been. And frankly, which is what has been happening. The question is, will we put a stop to it? Or will it continue to occur? Do I even need to get to the thousands of illegal aliens who've entered who are criminals, who not only have been criminals before they enter the country, but who have committed crimes in our country and are still here? I got this one for you. This is just a little chuckle on the way out. So you have some young dudes who they dressed up as Harris campaign supporters, and they found others who seemed to be Harris campaign supporters, and they knocked on their doors, say, "You support Harris?" "Oh, yeah, we support him." "And you know what's going on with the door?" "Oh, yeah, we want to make sure we welcome the immigrants." So they say, "Well, we got a bus right here, a car over here full of immigrants. We just want to know if you let them stay in your house." Look at how they responded. It's clip number three. Clip number three. Go.
"I dressed up like I work for Kamala's campaign, and now I'm going to deliver immigrants to her supporters."
"No! We are voting for you, don't worry."
"Are you?"
"Of course."
"We do have a surprise, if that's okay, just real fast."
"You have a surprise?"
"We're looking for a place for them to stay. They just came across. They'll sleep on floors. I mean, they're not picky, you know?"
"We have like a two-year-old, so..."
"Hector's good with kids."
"Sorry, we just can't."
"Could they just like sleep on your lawn?"
"They need a place to stay. They just came across."
"Hi. Teenagers live with me."
"Oh, that's fine. Hector, he was dating a teenager like a little bit ago, so..."
"Okay.
They just came across. They don't have papers. You're in support of like the whole border situation, and we're just trying to get them a floor to sleep on."
"We're a house of COVID.
Do you guys want COVID?" "They said they could survive it."
"You really learned how to say her name."
"We work with her, so we know how to say her name."
"Earlier you said Kamala. The way she pronounces her name is Kamala.
You don't work with her either."
"See that car? We have three dudes who just came across the border. We're trying to find them a home."
"Find them a home."
"Just say I'm voting for Donald Trump without saying it, okay?"
"That's a wrong attitude, mister. I said my vote is private."
"So you're voting Kamala?"
"No."
"You
said it again."
We're a house of COVID. Hey, guys, do you want COVID? They say they could survive it. "I have a house full of teenagers." Hector was dating. Of course, it's a joke, but you get the point that they're making out. It's very similar to the whole Martha's Vineyard situation. "We are a sanctuary city." "Well, give sanctuary then." "Nah, we're going to need y'all to move on. We're going to need y'all to move elsewhere." That was funny. That was funny. Man, glory be to God that we are not in this alone, that the Lord remains on his throne. We have the opportunity to be his hands and feet. And I am actually encouraged and confident that there is nothing men can do that will usurp the sovereignty of our God, which is why I am hope-filled. Hope is not synonymous with wishing. Hope, biblically, is a confident expectation of an anticipated in. All right. So my commitment is not only to see what occurs tomorrow, but to be ready on November 6th.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.